to you, people. It is Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis off for another day of broadcast insolence. Isn't it? Yes, it is. Do I have the... All right, I got everything working here. You know what? I just walked in. Violetta just reintroduced herself to us.
Hello, I'm back.
Oh, God.
I was in Vegas.
Oh, God. Do you really have... You don't really have to... We'll tell a story a little bit later on. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, I got stories.
Yeah. No, but there's one story in particular that requires a... that requires something here, and that's all I just want to say.
We got a little lucky there, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. That's personal. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. After what happened to poor Tom Brokaw, I don't want to have any conversation with anybody ever again about anything.
It was the Wheel of Fortune machine.
All right. Save it. This is not...
Is that what they're calling it these days?
I don't know.
Where's the around the world?
Oh, God.
All right. Hey, I just want to... I got to mention this very quickly before we get started with all the rest of the stuff coming up on the program. Tom Skilling's going to be here in just a few minutes. Mm. And then in the 4 o'clock hour, OB, Ed Obradovich will be here. And if you're looking to find out what happened with anything around the world, and I mean that literally and figuratively, Jeff Earl, most famous man in America, will be with us coming up in just a few minutes to talk about what's happening in other parts of the world that are affecting we here in the United States of America. But I want to say this. I want to thank the fine folks at Clearbrook, which is a center for developmentally disabled young adults, kids and young adults and adults. And they invited me to be a part of their festivities for fundraising on Friday night. We raised $1.2 million for them that night. And I would like just to say hello to Dean Ganim, who is a client at Clearbrook and a listener of this very radio program. So, very Dean, nice. Thank you for listening. And thank you, Clearbrook, for having us. And we'll be back anytime you want.
That's great.
So there you go. All right. Okay. Now,
oh, by the way, I'm not Anna. If people wonder if she had a cold.
Oh, Richard Roper
is
here.
Or something like
yeah.
that.
Anna is off today. She is having she's having a day. She's having a day to take off.
She deserves it. To put up with you 5 days a week.
Right. I was off a couple days last week. Violetta was off. We're kind of doing that thing where we're platooning, you know, where they're giving an extra day's rest to some of the key players.
That's good.
I'm taking a day next week.
Yeah. See, that's Kevin's going to take a day. That's how it's going to go.
Then we'll do a day-night doubleheader.
It's like a tap-in, tap-out.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. Mm. Speaking of tapping in, tapping out, I just want to say this. I'd like to get your thoughts on this, Mr. Roper.
Okay.
The White House Correspondents' Dinner, I would like to say that Michelle Wolf should have tapped out. She should have. This was. I think that this was the wrong time for this moment.
It was ridiculous to me, the overreaction to that. I don't think it was a particularly good performance. One of the things when you hear the clips is she sounded so nervous because she got into that real high upper range that people do.
What?
And they're kind of like almost yelling the jokes. Yeah. And she's very funny. And she's,
great.
You know, she's got
amazing.
Some great credentials. She's very good. You know, very good talent. I don't think a lot of people in the mainstream might have known her. But, I mean, the jokes were, I mean, compared to past correspondence dinners and other events like that and roasts of political figures, they were pretty tame. And I thought it was particularly funny to see all these journalists bending over backwards because they thought this is a chance to prove that they're fair. And they were going to defend Sarah Huckabee Sanders Mellencamp and the whole thing.
I think that was the
smoky eye thing. I mean, it's kind of vague and obscure, but the reaction was ridiculous.
Yeah, I think that there's something about the tone of it. They didn't ask me. If I had done it, I would have been just as biting. I have been as outspoken a critic as you would hope to find here. Especially in talk radio in America for the break, because there's a lot of sycophants and people who you know, just want to pat them on the back, hoping that they're going to become the secretary of something. But I have to call it like I see it, and I think that they've made a ton of mistakes, and they're behaving badly over at the White House. But but the way that they handled this, the way that the White House Press Corps or the White House Press Association handled this, I think was... this is not the moment to go. I'm on the Obama rule here, which is they go low, you go high. They call it fake news, doing
that.
All the stuff they come out of the White House with.
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Sarah Sanders standing from the podium and calling people liars to their face and things like that is after they've done real work and it turns out that they were right and she was wrong. Mm-hmm. This is an opportunity to show with grace hypocrisy and irony of all of that.
Well,
not to do it their way.
You're right. You make a great point. And, you know, those awards are supposed to be about honoring the best of journalism. They actually do give out awards during that thing. Everyone just talks about the comics monologue. And, you're right. Go high. Have Woodward and Bernstein host this year. You know, and I mean, literally have them host it and talk about, you know, investigative journalism. Or Redford and Hoffman as Woodward and Bernstein. But I think you make a good point. But it, to me, it was so weird because as this comedian was making these obscure jokes that people, I think, misinterpreted in some cases to be, you know, complete knocks on somebody's physical appearance, the president of the United States was in Michigan asking if there were any Hispanics in the room.
That's true.
And nobody's bothered by that because he just says so many crazy offensive things so often. It was so odd to me that the next day, you know, Sunday on Twitter, 95% of the commentary was about smoky eyes and 5% was about the president's madcap rally.
It was a madcap rally.
You know? That's bizarre.
He did ask, that is true. He did ask if there were Spanks in the room before he discussed the wall.
Not too many.
Okay. All right, I could do it now.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
In God's name.
I know. See, this is my problem. But that's not the way to do it because it proves the point. Michelle Williams. She didn't do anything. What Michelle Wolf did was that she proved the point that the Trump supporters and critics of mainstream media are making. Look, they're just out to get our guy. And that's the way it appeared to be on Saturday night. And that is a mistake. You could do a roast. You can have fun. You can have a comedian do it. But to go personally after people who really are... Listen, Sarah Sanders is just doing her freaking job. Whether you like it or not. Same thing with what's his face?
Spicer
and Reince Priebus and all those other people. They signed up for it. Now, if it were me, I wouldn't have.
Right.
But they've chosen to, you know, to do it. And I just, so to go after her, I think that's, it just cuts a little close to home because the people as caustic as she can sometimes appear on television, the White House press corps has a pretty good relationship with her. That's one of the reasons you saw so many people apologizing for her that fight with her.
Interesting.
On the air. They fight with her on the air in the press room, but they find her to be very cooperative with them.
Interesting. Okay.
And so I think that's one of the things.
That's why they rushed to her defense. So.
Right. And this is a tough moment for all of us. And believe me, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to sound like the president when I go, believe me. But they're in the White House, they think he's as crazy as we think he is. Because they're next to it and they see it.
Yeah.
They're just trying to figure out how are they going to get whatever the agenda is that they want. And sometimes the problem is that everybody's on their own page, Kellyanne Conway. I mean, Kellyanne Conway's husband is tweeting about what a goof the president is. Right? I mean, stop when you think about that.
Yeah. Golly.
Yeah. All right. I got to go. Tom Skilling is going to tell us how nice it is.
Can't wait to talk to Tom. Yeah. I got some questions for him.
And then Jeff Earl, Ed Obradovich will be here. And Steve Stone also going to join us too today. And Gordon Chang on the nuclear showdown that is going to be in North Korea. They're talking about the president's kind of road testing. Should I go to the DMZ or Singapore? Show of hands. He wants to get the rally. He's asking them. The people in the red hats in Michigan, he's going to ask them, where should he go? I don't think that's how you do it as a president.
I think he thinks DMZ is that thing Harvey Levin does with the big giant cup, and they talk about getting people at the airport. I enjoy the DMZ.
I love Harvey. He's in my pocket, too.
Hey, Donald Trump!
All right, here we go. Judy Pollack's going to tell us what's coming up. WGN News at the bottom of the hour.
Hey, how about this? You can fly to the front of the line at LitFest on June 9th and 10th with a Fest Pass. You can get yours before they're gone at Printers Row. You can do this, printersrowlitfest.org/FestPass.
That's big. Cool. Richard Roper in for Anna DeVlantis today on the Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantis. I was trying to, I had to make a narrative break there.
You did.
So it didn't sound like I was repeating myself. Tom Skilling brought to you by Permaseal Basement Systems, and here he is. Here he is. Tom. Congratulations, Tom. You win. We're going to give you a White House Correspondence Award.
How
of some sort.
About that? Is that right?
Yes, because you've done something that's so great. Hey, I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
I'm watching that Pat Tomasulo show over the weekend.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I noticed that you made an appearance on that program, breaking up a fight between he and Phil Ponce.
I know. It gets very noisy around here.
Yep. The whole thing is just, it's all kind of crazy.
Yes.
But you got, then you get in there. And I got to tell you something. If you don't submit that for a Chicago Emmy, I don't know. You have missed your opportunity, my friend.
I'm a very good person when I'm angry. You know, I mean, it comes so naturally to me. This is the way I address my computers when they break down and so forth. Mm. But Pat Tomasulo brings that out in
me. He does. Yeah. All of your work with Pat seems to be angry Tom Skillet.
It is. It's angry Tom.
Yeah.
This is the precursor to a new weather format called Angry Weather. You know,
see, and this you're is like where... the congenial parish priest that everybody like looks at and goes, oh, Father Tom is, you know, isn't Father Tom the best? You're the guy that gets has not paid for a meal in 40 years of service, right?
Let me set you straight, my friend.
Yeah, and that's
Father
not how it goes.
Tom can be pretty undocile at times here. Mm. But
okay. That's what we're learning. We're learning that Father Tom. Actually, backstage, it's like, all right, come here, USOB.
You know what? I'll tell you, when I did a Tomasulo bit where we started this Tom freaking Skilling thing, he came into me the day before and he kind of sheepishly says, hey, would you help me with a bit on our morning show? And I said, sure, Pat. And so he said, I'll tell you what, I'll bring in a script. And so he brings in a script and there's a line in it that says, I can have you killed. I said, you want me to say that? And he said, yeah. And so I did. And it's funny how that caught on. And it apparently spread within the weather profession because I had Dr. Joe Schaefer, who was director of the Storm Prediction Center, used to show up at our Fermilab on a regular basis. And he calls me up and says, brother, he said, you've got quite a temper on you, young man. He says, I'm not sure I'm going to, I'm kind of afraid speaking at your Fermilab program. I may not show up. So, but at any rate, isn't it funny? You do these bits and you don't know what's going to work or catch on or what isn't, and you have no expectations for it.
No.
You're just having some fun.
No.
But,
listen, Tom, I hope only that you are invoicing that Tomasulo character for each one. You know, you don't have to do these appearances. Is gratis.
Yeah.
You're an esteemed meteorologist.
You think so,
yeah. So, you just a little invoice.
You know who gets a prize for that piece though on Saturday is Phil Ponce over at Channel 11. Phil was great.
He was really good. Well, you know these Ponces. First of all, they are talented. They're a talented bunch.
They
but
are.
It is now apparently, and I did not realize this. They passed this at City Hall. It's a city ordinance.
Uh-huh.
There must be a Ponce on television or radio at any moment.
It's true.
I think that's a good idea, and hats off to the city council for doing
right.
That.
One Ponce a day is how it goes. Now there's three Ponces working currently.
I know,
so they're kind of. I think they're banking some of that time.
It feels like nine. Like there's more than three.
Well, have you heard them sing, Richard?
Ro?
I mean, they're marvelous.
For Rose's show. Yeah. They got a little bit of the showbiz in them. That whole family. I picture their holiday parties going deep into the night, Tom. Deep
I think
into
you're
the
right,
night.
Richard.
Right, where they're all one-upping each other at the piano. Yeah. I totally see it. Yeah, no, they killed it. As a matter of fact, they came out and they did dueling pianos. The two brothers did dueling pianos in our last Newsapalooza show.
Yes.
And
amazing.
And Richard Marx was the musical director.
Yes.
And they did a Richard Marx number. And Richard came on stage. He's like, what are you doing? And they killed it. They were great.
I'll bet he was. And, you know, somebody like Richard Marx has a critical eye. Being an accomplished musician, he is.
Yeah.
So I'll tell
he
you
did
so.
Invoice them, by the way.
Did he?
Because he's the writer of this.
Oh, you know, you guys invited me to that one year, and I didn't even know. I apparently went through upstairs, and I had it was one of those years when we were doing no weather radios out at local Walgreens stores and, encouraging folks to get those for severe weather season. So I had committed to that ages ago, and you already put out word on that, and you hate to
That's all right.
Break it off.
I
would love to do that sometime with you.
Tom, let me tell you something. Ro was always kind enough to indulge me, and Richard and I would work on a number where he'd find the one key that's smaller than anything you'd see in Harry Potter that I could sort of come close to hitting. But my background singers one year, Tom, are you ready for this?
Yes.
Cheryl Scott.
Wow.
Lauren Jiggetts and Anna DeVlantes.
Yeah. Holy smokes.
Matching outfits as the
Talk
Rich
about
Jets. Let me tell you
star
something.
Star power packed into one short bit, huh?
I got to just say that we...
Amazing.
Richard and I are no dummies. We figured out a way to put on a show and enjoy ourselves the whole time while we were doing it. It was a lot of work, and we did it for charity, and we did it for all the right causes.
Yep.
But we had fun putting those things together, and it really is. You know what was it? I think we both got it that if you ask people who are in one art but have always wanted to be something else, and everybody's always wanted to be a rock star.
So
you ask movie stars, and they're like, they wish that rock stars are the top of the pyramid in terms of entertainment.
It really is true.
And everybody wants to have that one moment.
Yes.
And so you have people who can sing, and they're natural performers, people who are on TV, and to have them go, hey, it's for charity, and to let their inner rock star out or inner dancer. We had one year where we had literally these girls went to a pole dancing school for a week single ladies. They did the Beyonce tune.
Wow, that was something else.
Yeah. And Richard and I had to go to rehearsal and check that out, make sure that was okay a few times.
Oh,
it was something.
Here we go.
That's
all right. This is exactly what we got Tom Brokaw in trouble. All right, here we go.
Yes.
Nice week, right?
Oh, this week is going to be fantastic. This will be the warmest week of the year. And the first time we've been into 80 degree territory since October. So, you know, this is the year we all come out into the streets and go, oh, thank heavens, it's about time. And this year, you know, this April's dragged on and on with that crummy weather. But it's beautiful. My car thermometer had 82 on it coming in here.
There you go.
This afternoon. So
you did a really nice job. Really good job. Good Tom Skilling.
Didn't have a thing to do with it, Ro, but I appreciate the sentiment.
Tom, is that an actual thermometer that you have on your
car? It
is. There? Like an old-fashioned
Richard? I'm amazed at how accurate these car thermometers are. You know, they sit there next to these hot engines, and you think, that's got to throw them off. And yet, it is incredible how accurate these things are. So,
I always assume that they're getting the pavement heat.
Well, you would think so. And that's why...
they may have moved them. They might be up at the top of the car now.
But you know what's interesting? I often find that whatever reading I get on my car thermometer leads the temperature that we normally get from ground-based weather observation sites. So they turn out to be pretty accurate. Mm. But what a treat. I'm looking at this map. We've got 80s covering Illinois, Missouri, Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas. The reason that's important is because that means it's going to stick around for a while. Oh, and did you see the dirt on your car?
It's always in the 80s in Iowa, by the way. Yes. What is that? You know what? Somebody mentioned that to me.
Yeah.
Why? Okay. Very quickly here. I'm way over time. Why was the rain so dirty last week?
We're plowing fields across hundreds of acres getting ready for growing season. And when you whisk, as we did Friday, a 40-mile-an-hour wind across it over hundreds of miles, this sends the dirt airborne and it mixed in with the raindrops.
That was it.
Yeah.
Couldn't figure
That's
it out.
What it was.
Thank you very much,
Happy
Tom.
Happy Monday,
it.
Guys.
Thank
Good
you.
To talk to you.
All right. Wow. That is, finally, an answer to a question that I had in my
That's
head.
Very cool.
Right now, we've got Judy Pilak standing by. She's got WGN News.
Did you address his reported comments from earlier this year when he reportedly used vulgar language to describe African nations?
Well, I'm very careful with what... the phrase says about others and myself. I'm not sure about, the validity or whether that allegation against the president was true or not. So the best thing for me is to keep quiet.
We didn't discuss it. And you do have some countries that are in very bad shape and very tough places to live in. But we didn't discuss it because the president knows me and he knows where I'm coming from. And I appreciate that. We did not discuss it.
Oh, God. There's a moment in the White House Rose Garden where the sitting president of the United States is with a world leader. In this particular case, he was with the Nigerian president, Buhari. And the question was, did you guys discuss whether or not the president called your country a crap hole country? And then this poor guy who's here looking for American help, right? In West Africa, here's a guy who's here doing that, and he's got to answer that question. And what is he going to do? He's going to go, yeah, I'm going to tell you something. This guy is a cracker. I don't think so. Jeff Hurl is joining us right now. Ro Contra with Anna DeVlantis, Richard Roper in today for Anna. Jeff is joining us right now from the, well, let's see, from the eye of the storm. Interesting moment here because the president is, he does have a lot on his plate, it appears. And you do have this, you got this African leader who is here, the Nigerian president, and they're discussing, you know, important stuff. But immigration has got to be one of those key topics, one would assume. Am I right about that, Jeff?
You are right about it. And I think the president was very candid that he has been watching this caravan in his personal interest in the issue. This has been a top thing for him to follow. He's been tweeting about it a lot. So it's fair to say this has been on the top of his mind. So he jumped at the chance to talk about it.
Yeah. And the caravan has arrived, and there were about, he says it started at thousands, and now it's down to 100 people, which is, I don't know if that how accurate that is. The last count I saw was somewhere around 300, 400 people or have arrived now, at least this one checkpoint near San Diego. And some people were, you know, climbing the wall, which, by the way, you know, when those pictures show up of the president with the people sitting on the top of the wall, you know that the president's going to be like, all right, we got to build a taller wall. You know, I don't know. What do we got to do now?
Can we arrest their leg if the one leg is over the wall?
It's crazy stuff. What?
It's not a small wall in the photos. It's a pretty tall one.
Yeah, I know. Well,
it's pretty substantial.
I was wondering now, how are those people going to get back down? That is a question. Yeah. I think a lot of us. I'm not alone in that. I'm not alone. Hmm. But now they said. Now I thought this was kind of a middling response from the U.S. Border Protection offices there. That so we're full up. We can't take any of these people in right now. But this caravan has been coming here for years. This is not the first time this has happened. This caravan, they're a little louder now, and people are paying attention to them because of the tension between Washington and this whole build the wall moment. But this has been going on for a long time, and they take these people in, and about 20% of them on average have been getting into the country based on their justifiable fear of going back to their homeland.
Mm-hmm. And there's no real good reason to not be prepared for the onslaught, right? When the commander in chief is tweeting about it, and it's a big TV story, so they could have had a couple extra agents there.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about some of the other stuff here. The other big story of the day is that Israel has released what they say are documents that prove, tons of documents that prove that Iran was lying about their nuclear program and that they actually were able to develop nuclear weapons. Now, if that is in fact the case, does this give full clearance now for the president to cancel the whole deal?
Well, it sure seemed like this was, set up or teed up for him to make that case. I thought the president didn't go as far with this information as he could have. I mean, Netanyahu's press conference was such a dramatic event with the big blow-ups and the photographs that came into their possession. And Trump certainly bashed the deal a little bit, but he can use this as ammo to bash it even more if he wants.
Do it. But where does this lead us to? I mean, that really is the question, because he has until Wednesday to make a decision about getting out of the deal.
And he keeps keeping alive the possibility of...
Uh-oh. Oh, poor Jeff.
So,
Jeff has been eaten by the cellular monster. All right, hold on 1 second. We'll see if we can...
See if we can get him back there.
Reestablish that. All right. The timing of this is a little suspicious.
Yeah.
Because with 2 days to go before he has to make a decision, then all of a sudden Israel have a press conference. Look what we found!
Yeah.
Look what we found! I mean, that seems to me to be good timing. Would you say?
Well, the president has been saying for a very long time what a very bad deal that is. I mean, he hates that deal. I don't know if he quite comprehends what it is exactly, but he thinks it's terrible. That's for sure.
Right. All right, Jeff. I'm sorry. I think we've been able to figure this out now. Do you have the sense? I mean, what are you hearing from your outpost right now? As the U.S. deputy political editor for Mail Online, are you hearing that this is a done deal, that we're getting out of the Iran deal?
Well, I think all the signals are that Trump wants to throw it out, but we can't. I mean, what we don't know is there some fig leaf or some way back in to negotiate this deal that he calls better, much the same way with NAFTA. He can make some tweaks and renegotiate it and say, gee, I've improved. But the Europeans aren't saying that that's the way they want to play ball.
Yeah. All right, Jeff Earle, thank you very much, sir.
Thanks,
appreciate
Jeff.
Your time.
Pleasure.
As always.
There's a lot of backing up. He does it a lot. You know, he backs away from this, backs out of that. The president, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that, this is a bad deal. And then he either kind of just waits for the smoke to clear and then goes, well, let's reconsider it, or he just moves on. He does that all the time, actually. We're going to do this, we're going to do that, I'm going to have a big announcement in 2 weeks, and then we never get that.
Right. But this one, it's too close, because he has to certify the deal. They have to certify the deal on May 1st. So if he doesn't certify the deal, then Iran gets to go, okay, we're going back to what we're doing. Now, the question is, can this go the other way, which is they had all this fissile material. If the Israeli intelligence is correct, they had all this fissile material that they would be that maybe they've been hiding it, and they could turn around and just start this thing all over again. And that becomes another question. I mean, the one thing about walking away from this deal is that that does allow Iran to just do whatever it wants. Iran already has the money that they wanted to get. Mm-hmm. Now, they will have sanctions reimposed. That's its own issue.
Right.
But they had the initial money, but then they spread that amongst all the power brokers there. And that's and the misunderstanding of that was that that was their money to begin with. We weren't paying them to go into the deal. We were holding money going back to the 1970s that we had quarantined here in the United States after the revolution. And that they wanted that money back with interest, and that's what we gave them.
Crates. Crates of
cash, yeah.
That's right out of one of those Tom Cruise movies.
Yes, it is. Well, this whole thing is out of a time. You know, we always assume that wacky things were going on. Mm. Turns out. Now we get to see him firsthand because the president can't keep it quiet. Look what he did.
Yeah.
But we knew about that. The money thing we knew about. I mean, that was a big criticism at the time. But it is, you know, it was part of the deal to get them to stop for a decade the development of nuclear weapons. What the president wants them to do, and he might get it. And he might get the Nobel Prize before it's all said and done. If he gets nukes off the Korean Peninsula and gets a lifetime or 50-year ban or something on nuclear weapons from Iran, he gets it and he would deserve it.
Yeah. He'll get the actual Nobel Peace Prize and he'll be the first winner to actually wear it as a medallion around his neck, like every day.
You think he's impossible now.
Oh,
wait
my
till
gosh.
He gets the Nobel Peace Prize.
They were chanting that at the rally.
Yes, they were.
They've gone from lock her up to Nobel Prize. Nobel Prize.
Although there was still a lock them up now.
Yeah, there was a lock.
There's
them
a lock
up.
Them up. There's like a whole list of people that they want to lock up. All right.
Wow.
Welcome to US of A. Exactly. All right. LB is gonna be with us.
Oh boy.
Ed Obradovich. How did the Bears do? Big deal. And the saga of Rokon continues. Will Rokon Smith join the Rokon show? Oh. That's a big question.
Okay.
Is the show big enough for two Rokons?
We'll find out. We'll find out coming up. But first, Judy, tell us what's coming up at the top of the hour. It's the Rokon Show with Anna DeBlantis. Richard Roper is here. Anna's off today. Kevin Powell has checked in.
I'm here.
And now, Violetta has checked in. I'm here. Don't forget me. Violetta was never the child that was left in the backseat of the car and they drove away. That never happened.
At least not willingly.
Yeah. All right, our old friend Ed Obradovich is joining us right now on the Super Celebrity Hotline. And OB, I talked to all my sports gurus over the weekend to try to get a good analysis of the Bears draft. And I'm leaving this finally to you. You're the only voice I trust in all of this. Do you think that the Bears had grade the draft for me A through F?
Do I think the draft that they had? It really comes down to the first three drafts, Smith, Daniels, and Miller. When you get back to the other three or four guys that are left in the draft, Fitz, Wims, Nichols and Joel, who I cannot pronounce his last name. But what I do, I think with the off-field acquisitions they made during the season, during this past winter, I think that the three guys we got, if I think that they can come through, we might have a chance. We might have a chance at making a pretty good run at it, even though we have a pretty tough schedule. But when you look at our number one draft choice, Smith, the thing that bothers me is his height and his weight. He's not 6'1". He's a little over 6 foot, and he weighs 225 pounds, not 236. And Daniels, the second-round draft pick, I like him a lot, from Iowa.
Yeah.
About 3'10", played center the last 2 years in college, but our genius coaches are going to take him. Now, we drafted him in the second round, and these coaches are going to put him at guard. Why wouldn't you draft a guard to play guard in the National Football League? But these guys know better. It's just like with Cody Whitehair. He played at Kansas State for 3-4 years. He played at tackle. They draft him to come in and play guard for us. And what happens 3 days before the opener? They put him in at center. I don't get it, gentlemen. Anyway, I think Anthony Miller, the third draft pick, I think he's got the heart. He's got the ability. And what he does have, you know, they say he drops passes at sometimes, but he's got some pretty damn good hands. He reaches out and catches the ball. So the first three choices I like. I think there's a possibility, again, with the off-field, all the people we acquired, we may have something here. We just may have something.
So, Obi, it sounds like you're worried when you talk about this Rokon Smith, which is an unfortunate first name, let's be honest. We might have to just rename him, just call him, you know, R. Smith.
I'm already working on Rokon. We're one step closer today than we were on Friday.
But it sounds to me like you're worried about this kid's ability to stop a running back who's going to be bigger and stronger than he is, more than his pass coverage. Is that correct?
That and a little bit more. Now, listen, Dick Butkus went over, and I know that Dick really researches this for the Butkus Award, the linebacker of the year, and he picked this kid. Yeah. But what bothers me, in the National Football League, you know, you go from college to the pros, just double the speed. All of a sudden, you've got guys that are 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", 320 pounds flying at you from a guard position or a tackle coming down at you. And what bothers me, if you're like a 4-3 defense. Remember, Mike Singletary was not a very big guy, but he had two guys, two defensive tackles that played in front of him that kept the center and the guards off of him. He could move. He had great quickness and a great nose for the ball. Now, this kid, because of his size, he's playing in the middle of a 3-4 defense. And what a 3-4 is, you have three down linemen with either a strong side linebacker or a weak side linebacker coming in for a blitz, okay? Usually that's who's coming in to make it a four-man rush. The fact of the matter is you have wide spreads, wide gaps between the center, the guard, and the tackle. And I'm going to tell you, at the snap of the ball, those guys are coming at angles. You know, you got a right tackle coming down looking for the middle linebacker or a guard in a switch block with the center, and they catch you, they can drive you right out of there. This kid does not have the size. I would feel better if it was a 4-3, where I know he could really put his ability to unbelievable use. But I'm going to wait and see on this and see how he reacts playing in the middle in the National Football League in a 3-4. The other thing I want to say, this coaching staff, Nagy and your coaches, you got 5 exhibition games to get ready, okay? We have players that we have linebackers year after year are hurt. We have rush passers from the outside are hurt. We have cornerbacks that are hurt. The middle of our offensive line year after year, they're hurt. We have receivers that are hurt. We get running backs that are hurt. Just think about what I'm telling you, Roger. It's year after year after year. The system is wrong. And what I believe they have to do, because when they go to training camp, they do nothing and they hardly play. They have hardly played our number one guys in the exhibition season. There's no way. You've got to play to get ready for the National Football League. You can't wish or pray yourself in there. You got to get in playing shape. And if Nagy comes out and I see these guys tiptoeing around playing two or three downs and then they take them out and then they put the guys who will never make the team or won't get on the field play the majority of the time, that's a big mistake. Mark my words.
OB, the edge rushing position for the Bears.
Kevin Powell, your question.
Yes, Mike. OB, good to talk to you, by the way. The edge rushing position for the Bears is thin right now, other than Leonard Floyd, and even he's still sort of a question mark at this point. It's thin. They don't have a lot of depth there, and they didn't really address it in the draft early on. Where do you see them going in improving that position, or do you think there is enough there? Could they potentially bring back Willie Young on a one-year deal or something like that?
Well, I was surprised to let Willie Young go, tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I thought that he would be here because he shows spurts of greatness. But then again, these guys, they get hurt. And so, you know something? I wouldn't be a bit surprised. We're talking about Rokon Smith. I wouldn't be surprised if it's 3rd and 11. You might see him, either, like if he's not in a blitz, you might see him coming from the outside. When it's, you know, it's a definite passing situation because this kid is lightning. I mean, he's got speed and quickness that's really hard to fathom. I mean, this kid can move.
I want to stop you there for a second because we know that he's got speed. We know that he's got he's an intuitive linebacker, which is really an important thing, which I think is why he won the Butkus Award.
Yes.
That he's a guy that, you know, they talked about. We had Matt Forte in on Friday talking about this, and, you know, he said his first day in practice, lining up against Urlacher, and Urlacher called the play before he got the ball, right? Called it out. And he's like, oh, no, am I going to deal with a guy like, you know, in the NFL? Welcome to the NFL, guys who know what they're doing, has been linebackers and call a defense. And they say the same thing about Rokon Smith, that he's capable of doing that. He's going to have that good intuition. Don't you think they can get him the size? I mean, isn't that part of the training regimen in the NFL?
Well, just what you just said, his instincts and they're there. But, Ro, what you got to understand here is this is a giant leap. Believe me, it's a giant leap. And again, not to talk in circles here, but what bothers me about this kid is his size. That's what bothers me. Now, is he going to be able to read plays and before they're hatched or before they're called? Some people could do that if they're great studiers of the game. Butkus was excellent at it. You know, he did his homework very well. Urlacher did his homework very well. That's why he was able to call that play. If it's in a certain down and they're in a certain offensive set, you know what the hell's coming.
All right. I think these guys all tend to get a little bit bigger in the NFL anyway, and I just think that they're going to be working on that with him. Kid seems to have a good attitude. I'm excited about him because that is a need. And as you mentioned, I mean, we're starting to see way too many injuries. I just want to ask you this, and I'm going to sit down and wait for your aneurysm. You think Kevin White's going to play this year for the Chicago Bears? I'll sit down now and wait for my answer.
Kevin White's going to play for the Bears?
Yeah.
I don't. What the hell are you drinking, Ro?
Thank God Kevin White's gonna be back and healthy this year. That's I was gonna ask it like that and see if you'd just go totally ballistic. Well, all right, let's talk about the schedule because you mentioned that it's a fairly tough schedule. But what do you think? Can this team be competitive in the NFC North? Let's start there.
It all depends how the free agents signing and these three young kids come along during the five exhibition training camp and five exhibition games. Because I'll tell you what, when the gun goes off, you're at Green Bay.
Yeah.
On a Sunday night. And then guess what? Your next game is at night at home, I believe, on a Sunday or Monday, and it's against the Seahawks. You think they're going to come in here playing in a lose? You know, and then you got Arizona, and then you got the Buccaneers coming in here who killed us last year. Then there's a tough middle schedule. And then, Ro, when you look at the last four games, Rams at home, the Packers at home, at San Francisco, and at Minnesota. So these guys better get ready to play that opening game because we do have a tough schedule. Now, We got to go six times. Kirk Cousins came from the Redskins to the Vikings as a free agent. This guy's a gunslinger. You know, they got a great coach in Mike Zimmer. They're young. They've got an aggressive defense, and they're very, very hungry. Detroit Lions, Matt Stafford, the highest-paid quarterback in the National Football League. We got to play him twice. And then we got to talk about Aaron Rodgers and what they've done up in Minnesota. This guy will not stand for the Packers losing, Aaron Rodgers. He's always a force that you have to deal with. So in our NBC, our North Division, I think right now is the toughest division in the NFL, and we got to play these guys six times. I'm going to tell you something. They better learn their stuff, and they better play, and they better get ready because it starts from the get-go at Green Bay. And if they don't show up, Katie by the door, it's going to be a hellish year.
Hey, Obi, I want to ask you real quick if we can just step outside of the Bears situation for a second. And the Cleveland Browns with the number one pick. And to me, it just seemed like a very Cleveland thing to do to take Baker Mayfield, who obviously has got a lot of talent, but I don't know necessarily the right mentality to become a true leader in the NFL. And to my mindset, Obi, I would have taken the kid out of Penn State. Saquon Barkley was a sure thing, a solid citizen, a great running back, and they still could have gotten another top-tier quarterback at number four. Your thoughts?
Number one, okay, do you think, with Manziel, do you think lightning could strike twice in Cleveland?
Yes. It has struck 23 times with their last quarterbacks.
That is true.
My favorite quarterback is the kid from Wyoming. I think he's head and shoulders above anybody Rosen and all the rest of them that are out there.
Oh, that Rosen's a punk. I'm going to tell you right now. That kid is going to be trouble in the NFL because it's all about him, and that does not work in my National Football League.
But just watch my guy, and I think Buffalo drafted
Josh Allen. Yeah, Buffalo made some moves to get him.
Yeah.
And we got to play Buffalo in Buffalo, and they had a pretty good team last year. But yeah. if I may, you know, just one kind of bad thing, and then I'll just sum it up.
All right.
You know, I just our general manager Pace. This is, I think, his fourth draft. He's coming into this draft. He was rated the lowest general manager in the National Football League by NFL.com. My. What a moniker to have.
Well,
all right. So there's
room for improvement.
Do you think the Bears, I mean, just get, all right. Everybody just calm down. Take a deep breath.
I already got him at 0-4.
Okay. Do you think that the Bears will be 8-8 or better?
I think that's the best that we could hope for is 8-8. And I hate to say that because I think every time a team should go in there, there's two words, Super Bowl. Anything less means is absolutely nothing. But I think if we could get to 8-8, I think if those three draft choices come through and our acquisitions in the offseason and we can get a system where, for God's sakes, every game, half the team can't even suit up because they're hurt. And that's one of the biggest problems we've had the last several years. I don't understand how the hell these guys get hurt. They don't do anything.
There you go. We're going to leave it there. Huh. Ed Obradovich, the great one.
Thanks, OB.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Guys, talk to you later.
All right. Here is Judy Pollack telling us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Hey, Tuesday. Power happy Colorado's ready to rock Wrigley, but they might have met their long ball match in the Cubbies. Cubs Rockies Tuesday at 7 on WGN TV.
That was very sporty around here.
Yeah.
And Obradovich was just with us. Steve Stone's going to join us. Cubs are heating up. You got that going.
Mm-hmm.
Sox heated up a little. Bats heated up a little bit over the weekend. We'll talk to Steve about that.
Cool.
Does it heat up when it heats up? I mean, that's really the question.
That's the question.
Because these guys have been playing up north. And it has been awful anywhere that they, you know, that Minnesota's had all kinds of trouble. And if you're playing outdoors up north, you're having trouble in the month of April.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
Fripping the balls
for sure.
The what now?
The everything changes. The bats, the balls.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they use different bats and balls when it's cold.
No, don't engage her in this. This is it. We got enough trouble. Violetta just got back from Las Vegas, and literally there's Nevada state troopers here in the building looking for her.
I heard she was at a club called Bats and Balls, actually, the after hours place.
Is that what it was called?
All right, here we go. We'll find out more about that a little bit later on in the program after we put the kids to sleep. Mm-hmm. But first, Judy Pilak is standing by. She's got the WGN News being brought to you by Townstone Financial. It's a Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis, Radio 720 WGN. Richard Roper is here and is off today. Steve Stone joins us on the Super Celebrity Hotline in just a second here. As the White Sox took 3 of 5 from the Kansas City Royals, including in the first half of a doubleheader on Saturday. They kicked a little Royal Keister, is what I would say. Right about there.
Yeah.
The bats are coming alive. I want to ask you this question, because this is an important one, Steve. I think a lot of people, especially, you know, fans didn't want to go out to the parks. Even, you know, even Cubs fans, you know, who are like, you know, maybe this is their one chance all year to be able to go out there, weren't going.
I can't blame them.
Yeah, because it was so cold. How much of an impact does that have on these players?
Well, think about a couple of different things. You know, this isn't football. It's not basketball. Or hockey, which is played in climate control, although hockey's a little cooler, quite obviously. But it's a finesse game. Yes, it takes strength, but it's a finesse game. You have to feel your hands. It's very important. It's not like a big, gigantic defensive lineman who just throws the other lineman aside and goes and tackles a ball carrier. When you're trying to grip a baseball that's a little over 5 ounces and you're trying to throw it 100 miles an hour and you're trying to throw it in a teacup, if you can't feel your hands for any reason, there's going to be a problem. Guys are going to get hit. Pitchers are going to give up runs. A hitter who hits a fastball right in on his hands might be singing to him for another 3-4 innings. And so the conditions are awful, and I think every major league manager will tell you the same thing. The game was never invented to be played in weather conditions like this. But look, this centers into the act of God clause, because there's nothing you can do about the weather. We've tried in Chicago for many years complaining about it. It doesn't work. It's just, it is what it is, and unfortunately this year, the weather has been awful, primarily throughout the country, and you're playing in those conditions, so it's very difficult. There's no consistency to be had. The greatest example probably is Lucas Giolito. Giolito, last year when he came up, was brilliant through 7 games. In spring training, one of the few guys to have really an outstanding curveball in Arizona. You just don't find that too often, and yet, early in the season, he had no curveball whatsoever. He had no feel. He had no touch. He was throwing the ball well wide of the plate with all of his pitches. It wasn't just his curveball. He couldn't hit with his fastball either. But he's a California kid, and he's a guy who understands the finesse of the game. Although he's got a good fastball, he has to have the off-speed pitches to be successful, as most pitchers do. And I think it affects everybody, and certainly affects the fans. Why would you go out in a situation where your wind chill factor is in the 20s? This isn't an endurance test. It's supposed to be fun. Fans are supposed to have fun coming to the ballpark. You can't have a lot of fun when you have icicles dripping from your nose and when getting to the concession stand is arduous because you can't feel your feet or your knees. And so that's exactly what the fans have been going through. I don't blame them for staying away. I mean, we'd love to see them there, and I think it helps the ball club when they are there. But the conditions have been awful, and it's reflected in attendance throughout the league. Yes, there are places who draw in cool climates like Toronto because they have a dome. What a nice thing. But they don't draw. They haven't drawn in Minnesota all that well because, again, the weather conditions have been awful. So, you know, let's give the fans and everybody else kind of a pass, give some of the players a pass. Yeah, some guys are off to good starts, but a lot of those guys either play or they visited the West early or the South. They visited that early, and they were able to play in pretty good conditions.
Steve, I want to ask you a little bit, like what Ro alluded to with the Tim Anderson and the, you know, the celebration and some of the Royals taking umbrage and the White Sox overall. Now, listen, it's very different, as you well know, from when you played. Guys now, you know, you're 27 games out in August and the team wins a game, a walk-off homer, and they mob, the whole team mobs the guy at the plate and they act like they won the World Series. But with the White Sox, it almost seems to be the next level. They clearly are having a lot of fun with each other, but they're even horsing around sometimes during pitching changes, the over-celebrating. I mean, do you feel that they're skirting to the edge of doing too much of that for a team that's really got a lot to learn and is, off to a rocky start?
No, they do have a lot to learn, I will grant you that. But as far as over-celebration, let's just take that isolated instance that was the Tim Anderson leadoff home run, and let's analyze what happened. So he hits a home run. Sox have been crushing the Royals. The Royals are off to a ridiculous start. They're last in the league. The only thing stopping the Sox from being last in the league is the Royals and the domination of the Royals so far in the early going. So you got a ball club that's really down. And the Royals are a proud team. I mean, there's a lot of these guys, and Salvi said it too. You know, we've got our World Series. Mm. He also didn't say they came one game away from that second World Series that was the year before. So this is a proud team that has been decimated by a number of different things, defections of Eric Hosmer, and you can't blame him for going to San Diego. That's kind of nice out there. Hmm. But they've lost a lot of players. They've lost a lot of that bullpen that made Ned Yost into a really good manager because he was a push-button manager. He could manage for six innings, turn it over to the pen, and they won. Well, that isn't there anymore. And so that ball club was getting crushed, and I believe that Salvi Perez did that because, number one, he's the leader of the team. Number two, he wanted a way to get his team to rally. And how was he going to do it? He was going to pick on one thing, and maybe it wasn't conscious on his part. You know, I'm going to wait for one thing, and then I'm going to pounce on that. But he had the golden opportunity because Tim, number one, loves the game, and he has a zest for the game, and he is very vocal. But he didn't throw it in Salvi's face. And he rounded the bases, and he was certainly, he was exuberant. But again, he didn't point to any Royals. He didn't say, you know, he didn't say to the pitcher, you know, I got you, throw that in there, I'll get you again, that kind of thing. And when he crossed the plate, he wasn't even looking at Salvi. In fact, what he did was he tapped his chest protector, if you looked at the pictures. And then Salvi started the dialogue at the plate. This was entirely done by Salvi. And when they were out at second base, quite frankly, they were just talking. Salvi had his point. He was a little animated. Tim had his point because Tim has always said, I'm not going to back down from anybody. And so that's just the nature of the game. Tim has fun in the game. I think Salvi was trying to make a point to his teammates. I don't even think he was trying to make it Salvi was trying to make a point to his teammates, not Tim. And so it just was a convenient time to rally his troops. And as a true leader, they won two more ball games. They won the final two games of the series after losing three straight. So from this point of Salvi Perez, that worked. There was no harm, no foul. But a greater situation here, guys, is this whole idea of people streaming in gradually from both the dugouts and the bullpens. This is absurd. This is one of the most ridiculous things that baseball puts up with, and I can't understand it because it's an easy fix and they could do it tomorrow. Third man in rule. Mm-hmm. First, if he's the third man in, you get suspended. Pick out a week. Let's say it's a week. Get suspended for a week with no pay. You believe with four big umpires, in the case of Jordan Baker, he's like 6'8". So you got four umpires to separate two guys, one of which probably doesn't want to fight. And so you don't have any problems. Nobody gets sucker punched in the back of the head. Nobody gets spiked. Nobody like Mark Grace did when he charged them out in St. Louis. Nobody gets a separated shoulder. Nobody gets hurt at all. You don't lose your stars. We're in the business of protecting our stars in this game, which is why you can't collide with the catcher anymore, which is why you can't take the pivot man out at second base, which is why hitters are allowed to armor up the front elbow. And because we're trying to protect our stars, this is a way to protect your stars. What if Bryce Harper gets hit in the back of the head by somebody and he has vertigo or equilibrium problems and he can't hit for 2 months? You think the Nationals are going to be really happy about that? So the powers that be, whether it's Rob Manfred or anybody who's in charge of the rules, you make a third man in rule, and all of this ridiculous stuff with guys streaming in from the bullpen to get instantly mad at something they don't know anything about at that time, seems to me we've lost that. We're by that already. Let's get on with moving the game faster. They want to move the game faster, protecting our stars. They want to protect the stars. And what went on in Kansas City is kind of ridiculous. It's pretty much everybody's talking, nobody's doing anything, and then you get back to business, but you wasted 5 minutes. And you gave guys an opportunity to get hurt that wouldn't otherwise if you had the rule.
Yeah, Steve, that's a great point because in all the other professional leagues, you leave the bench and you're suspended. You know, it's not an automatic thing. You know, but not in Major League Baseball. Let's get the stone rule in effect.
For whatever reason, baseball saying, well, the fans like to see this, so we'll continue doing it. But understand something. You know, these great arguments that managers used to have with umpires. They were terrific. They were entertaining. Mm-hmm. But now with video replay, you don't see near as many arguments. You see a few, but not even close. I mean, mm-hmm. the legendary arguments with Earl Weaver mm-hmm. and some of the other umpires around, they were brilliant and very entertaining. But now you just don't see it because we've evolved by that. So let's evolve into a situation. If we're going to make it a kinder, gentler game, and make no mistake, guys, this is a much gentler game than when I played it and the generation before me and the generation before them. This is something where we're protecting our stars now. There's not all that many of them. We got to make sure that we don't get them hurt. The game has dedicated itself to that, and this is just the next evolution.
Yeah. Steve, what do you make of Matt Davidson's power surge at Kauffman Stadium? He has 9 homers this year. 7 have come in KC.
Yeah, it's absolutely remarkable, and it's a question of a couple of different things. Number one, Casey's pitching isn't too good, so that certainly factors into it. But also, you know, he got off to that fast start on opening day, and you couldn't predict it because it was god-awful cold, and the wind was blowing, and it was one of those days where the Sox had 6 home runs. They also hit 5 in the first game of the series in this particular series. So I don't know what it is about that hitting background. I think it's the fact that it's a combination of Kansas City pitching and maybe the Sox were just ready to hit. But as far as Matt is concerned, he's made some technical changes. He has changed things with hand position and the ability to bring the bat through the zone. So he is trying to get a whole lot better at what he does. He's enormously strong. So what happens is line drives that would be doubles for other people, they go out of the park for Matt. He doesn't have to worry about hitting the ball in one spot. He doesn't have to worry about pulling it. He can take it out in any part of the ballpark. He just loves the sight lines in Kansas City. Some guys have ballparks that they love. Some guys have some that they don't like so much. Matt really likes Kansas City.
Yeah, clearly. And, you know, I want to go back to Tim Anderson for just a second. This is a very fun kid to watch. And I think, you know, I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. This is a guy who is going to be a team leader. And I like the fact that he got in Kansas City set. And I know that it's easy pickings right now, as you pointed out. But, you know, this is a franchise that needs faces, that needs people to be standouts right now, especially in this media market where, you know, you need to make a name for yourself. And I think this kid's going to be something to watch. And I'm excited. I'm probably most excited for him as I am for anybody on this team.
Well, look, you're watching something that's really interesting to me, especially because you're watching the confluence of a few different things coming together at one point, and that is, number one, the physical talent of Tim Anderson. Number two, the emotional talent of Tim Anderson, and also the growth as both a player and a human being. He went through some terrible times last year, and emotionally, it's tough to separate or compartmentalize, that's what people call it these days. And he lost a dear friend of his in the offseason to a shooting. It was horrible. And Tim had a hard time putting that behind him. Well, it is behind him now. And he understands the fragility of life. And he understands that it can all be taken away from you tomorrow. And he has his daughter. And he enjoys baseball. He gets a thrill out of it. And you're right, guys. He is going to be a leader of this team.
Yeah.
And watching him grow with Moncada in the shortstop second base dynamic, which is just unbelievable, and watching him grow as a human being over the last year has been something that I've truly enjoyed. Now, I think he has to get a little less careless at shortstop, and I think he will. Right now, he makes spectacular plays. Some of the routine plays have eluded him. But again, he's a young kid. He's going to get better and better. The talent is there. Now the emotional growth is there. And now everything that has become Tim Anderson, along with all of the instruction he's had and the fact that the Sox invested a number one draft pick in him, we're starting to see exactly why that is. I watch him on a daily basis get better and better. I watch him take control. I watch him hit. I watch him do the things that you have to do, and there's still a lot of room left. He's going to get a lot better, and then he's going to be exceptional. Right now, he's growing with Moncada. You know, that double play combination for every team is essential. These two guys are young. They're growing up together. And I think for the Sox, looking ahead, this is a pretty nice pair to have in the middle of the diamond.
Fun.
You know, you build your team from the catcher, the center fielder, and the shortstop and second baseman. Well, probably for growth purposes, we have the shortstop and second baseman. We fill in the other two positions eventually, and then you've got yourself really something.
All right. Steve Stone.
There you go.
See you tomorrow night. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks,
okay, guys. Richard Rowe, take care. See you guys later.
Thanks, buddy.
Forget about you, Kev. You're out.
That's fine.
All right. Right now, Judy tells us what's coming up at the top of the hour in the news.
Hey, you have to meet our Cochran's Kid of the Week tomorrow at 6:40 a.m. Ty Jones, 13 years old. He's a hockey goalie with just one eye, and he's doing incredible things.
Wow. Got the kids. Not good with interviewing the kids. All right, kid, get out of here. You know, I get very W.C. Fields-ish.
Jeez.
I do that. Coming up a little bit later on, we welcome Violetta back to the show after being gone for, oh my God, was it like 24 hours? Wow.
It's a minor miracle she made it back from where she was.
From Las Vegas. The first time you were in Las Vegas, right?
Yeah, it was my first time.
Mm-hmm.
And people treat you really special when it's your first time in Vegas.
Oh, because you tell them it's your first time in Vegas.
Yeah, and then, you know, they just want to show you everything and, like, really entertain and... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Violetta walking up to strangers on this trip. Hi, I'm Violetta. It's my first time here. Hi, I'm Violetta. It's my first time here.
Violetta, Violetta, again, we'll tell the story a little bit later on in the program. Violetta ran into a legend, an American entertainment icon and legend. Got her picture taken with him.
Yeah.
And then turned to her friends and goes, who was that?
Yeah, amazing.
Well, my friends didn't know either. But the guys from the pool.
Of course, your friends didn't know because it's like. Yeah,
but the guys at the pool were like, oh, my God, we're going to this big show. And they're telling us about it. And, you know, and they're like, oh, actually, you know, they saw our eyes glaze over. And they're like, this might be before your time, actually. And they were right.
Yeah.
But he was really nice.
Mm-hmm. We'll find out who it is a little bit later on. Amazing. You'll be shocked to find out that. Well, so it's sort of surprising and not surprising all at the same time.
Yeah,
Violetta didn't know who he was.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
It's as big a name in Hollywood as one could imagine. Yes.
I thought he was a comedian.
Yeah. Oh.
I mean, he is in some respects.
Yeah. But she thought it was like the opening act of Cleopatra's Barge. You know, like that little old man is trying to do some jokes.
Oh,
now.
Isn't that cute? Yeah. All right. Wait till you hear this. That's all I'm going to say. Wow. Wait till you hear this. And God knows what other trouble you got into there.
None at all.
Just surprised.
Nope. We were well behaved.
How many people were you with?
I was with about 6 people.
Oh, God. Is this the same traveling party that ends up with the...
No, this was all girls.
Mm. Oh, God. Oh. So. Now, how many things... I got 10 seconds. How many things did you pay for?
None, and we actually, well...
Yeah, I didn't think so. All right, more late. Rope Con Show with Anna DeBlantis. She's off today. Richard Roper is in the studio with us.
Hello, hello.
Everybody else is in their proper place.
Yeah.
Excitable Kevin Powell, very excited about the Rokon on Rokon era, which is about to begin.
Love it. Yeah. Continuing to hear analysts and fans mispronounce his name and say Rokon.
I know. It's going to really drive him nuts.
There's a great guy on Twitter who's like, I'd be more excited about this Rokon on Rokon if I knew who Rokon was.
Oh, my.
Ouch.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
They were talking about the football player,
right? No, they weren't. No.
It's the whole Oprah Winfrey thing all over again.
Yeah.
What the hell is Rokon?
Yeah, exactly. Wait, no, hold on.
Look at that SOB.
Hold on. What's wrong with my computer? There we go. Don't anybody tell me.
Rokon, who's that?
There you go. Yeah.
I just love it. But
this guy's thinking I could have got drafted by the Steelers, the Lions.
Yeah, there's no Rokon. There's only one market in America where there's a Rokon.
It'd be the first time in the history of professional sports a player demands to be traded to another radio market.
I actually just saw a Con doctor. His last name was Con.
Uh-huh.
And I looked him up and I spelled it C-O-N-N. That's not how he spells it.
Great story.
That's fantastic.
Great story.
Well, I like to look them up first to see what they look like. Doctors.
I just want Rokon Smith to be good, because which I'm sure he will
yeah,
be.
Yeah, that would be the downside.
But
yeah.
I just do not want OB screaming his name in vain. That is the one thing I do not want.
Yeah, you don't want to have what I had to deal with in high school and Mr. Stanley Roper from Three's Company, the bumbling landlord.
Yeah.
Like, really? I couldn't get a Clooney character or something, you know?
All right, are we ready? I think we are ready now. Here we go.
It's the top 5 on the Rokon Show.
5.
Let's go.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in at
number 5.
Bill Cosby shot himself in the head the moment he opened his mouth and long before his sexual assault trial started. So says one of the jurors. Harrison Snyder appeared on Good Morning America today and said the unimpeachable evidence that led to the conviction of Cosby was the fact that he admitted to having used drugs to calm women down before.
What was the evidence that made you sure, beyond a reasonable doubt, that he was guilty?
I think it was his deposition, really. Ms. Crosby admitted to giving these quaaludes to women, young women, in order to have sex with him.
But when you entered the room for the first time, were you sure that he was guilty?
No.
So what then made the difference for you once you started deliberating?
Hearing everyone's comments about certain pieces of evidence and going through the different counts.
So you don't feel, even now, that it was an open and shut case?
No.
Well, okay. We weren't in the courtroom, so
yeah.
I always defer to jurors. That's a situation where people can second guess a jury or get all mad about something. But unless you were there, how do you have any idea what the deliberation's going to be? It's just an unfair thing for people outside to do.
It's
but
true. You're right.
Having said that, mm-hmm. doesn't stop me from commenting.
Now here you come in with your rush to judgment.
But I mean, there were 62 women. Came up with the right verdict here. And Bill Cosby is not going to spend the rest of his life in prison. For those of you who are feeling sorry for Bill Cosby, because I know there are people out there who are. I heard the murmuring today in the on When Is He Alive in the crowd when this came up. It's sort of like there are people out there. I think there are people of a certain age out there who will always see Bill Cosby as like the Jell-O salesman.
Yeah.
Right? And is like just, you know, cute and adorable and affable. I mean, it kills. I mean, think about this. Fat Albert. I mean, you know, I grew up with Fat Albert.
Mm-hmm.
And Fat Albert was a lovable character. And the original Cosby Show, and then the Cosby Show.
Spy was a groundbreaking 80s. Show, right?
Right.
When he was with Robert Culp and,
right.
and all the great. We've talked to him. And, you know, he was like, you were talking to a legend before you knew all this. And all the stand up, all of it. He was a pioneer and all the great TV, but that all goes away.
But he
taking his name off buildings and doctorates and all that stuff.
Right.
You know?
And he, by the way, was not a made-up doctor like a lot of people get a doctor in an honorary way. He actually did go through the program to get a doctor of education. I mean, but the reality is that this is how he somehow felt he needed to have sex with women. I mean, it's crazy.
And you know, the story's been out there forever about the infidelities, not so much this stuff, but it was Hannibal Buress who
started the
whole thing with talking about it on stage.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, there he goes. My guess is he gets 2 or 3 years at his age.
Not in great health anyway.
No.
So
out of
it's a sad end, but it's really, you know, I did see the same thing. People saying, really, you know, it's a sad thing for him. I go, it's a sad thing for all of those women. That's you know, and
62
many of them very brave and coming forward and telling their stories years after the fact. And you know, that was one of the things that stemmed from a lot of the new dialogue we've had over the last 2 years.
All right. Checking in at
number 4.
President Trump apparently stood by his campaign calls for Muslim ban in a news conference today with the Nigerian president, Muhammadu Buhari. What's he doing here?
Jeez. I keep getting emails from your widow. I'm not sending you any more money. You're alive.
Right, that's true. You have to wonder if he traveled with Nigerian generals who were all here going, hey, I have the money for you now. There's a bunch of Americans who are waiting for the Nigerian general to show up with the cash.
Jeez.
He promised them.
Yeah, I was going to get $36 million back for that $6,000.
Yeah, where's the money in my account? Anyway,
talk about some tricky emails.
The first question of the joint press conference went to Washington Times reporter S.A. Miller, who pointed out that the opposition to the Trump administration's travel ban in court rests on his campaign rhetoric calling for a ban of Muslims in the U.S. What say you, Mr. President?
If you would simply apologize for some of your rhetoric during the campaign, the whole case would go away. And I was wondering if you would.
I don't think it would, number one. And there's no reason to apologize. Our immigration laws in this country are a total disaster. They're laughed at all over the world. They're laughed at for their stupidity. And we have to have strong immigration laws. So I think if I apologize, it wouldn't make 10 cents worth of difference to them. There's nothing to apologize for.
Yeah. Ever for him.
Right. That's not what they're laughing at. He's right about this, though, that it wouldn't make a difference. He said it, and it's not like he's... The Washington Times, which is a Trump-friendly newspaper, Washington Times, not the Post, if people are kind of wondering, what did he just say? They
you know, they're trying to give him an out. Like, hey, just apologize and you'll get your ban. And that's not going to work that way. But here he is talking about the caravan has arrived.
What percentage of those people do you believe are deserving of asylum in the U.S.?
Well, I won't get into percentages, but we are a nation of laws. We have to have borders. We don't have borders, we don't have a country. And I've been watching for weeks as the caravan came up. And, you know, the Mexican laws are very tough on immigration, extremely tough. And it started out with way over 1,000 people. I guess now it's down to about 100 going all through Mexico. People don't realize what a big country Mexico is.
Yes, we do.
But it came down by a lot.
Why is he constantly insulting our intelligence?
Well, you know the pattern. When he learns something, he always says a lot of people didn't know that, or people didn't realize Abraham Lincoln was a Republican. A lot of people didn't know Mexico was a big country.
Okay.
He always does that.
Okay.
But we have to have changes in Congress, and we have to have it quickly. We need a wall, number one. And you see that right now, you know, where they are, even though it's not a particularly good wall, and even though a small percentage can climb to the top, they have to be in extremely good shape. But a small percentage can climb that particular wall. We have a wall that's much more difficult. But if you didn't have that, you'd have thousands of people just pouring into our country. You got to have a wall.
I love how he just like throws that in. I thought for sure he was going to say, I could climb that wall all day long. I'm better than that Spider-Man. It'd be in really good shape.
I got to say, I want to know how those people got up on that wall. I mean, if you look at that.
They were young kids in most cases, young, you know, teenagers that look like, you know, you see kids sometimes and climb anything, man.
I don't know.
They just climbed up. There was footage of them just climbing up, just like finding little, you know, spots. Look, you see these kids today, these fake walls and these cliffs. They go climbing.
I know, but
they swing from rock to rock.
But they got ropes and stuff. These kids, they just climbed up the side. I'm telling you right now, iron workers could use some of these guys, right?
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, sign them up now.
I just think it's so great. Like that, now he's like in the middle of it. Like, you have to be really good shape to climb that wall.
Right, you do. Sort of like me.
I know.
Do the one pinky.
That's going to be the next Celebrity Apprentice. There's going to be a wall climbing guy.
The wall they climb looks just like the design he's chosen for this.
He likes that.
Yeah. Oh, wait, we're going to have to change now. Although there's a way to put something at the top to keep him from climbing. They should just put pit bulls at the top of every wall sort of thing. I mean, I don't want to give them any ideas.
They're just going to go Shawshank and go under.
Yeah. I don't know what to do. Okay. I don't know what goes on with this anymore. I'm kind of giving up.
No, you can't. It's only Monday.
All right. 3-year, 2-year, 1. But first, Judy tells us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Tuesday, Power Happy Colorado's ready to rock Wrigley, but they might have met their long ball match in the Chicago Cubs. Cubs Rockies, that's Tuesday at 7 on WGN-TV.
It's the Rokon Show. Here is Richard Roper. He is here. Anna DeVlantis is off today. The top 5 at 5 continues. We're up to
number 3.
You know, that 11-year-old kid who went viral because he yodeled in Walmart?
Oh, yeah.
He signed a record deal.
He did what now?
How angry do people who actually have real talent? I mean, not that the kid doesn't have real talent. I don't want to take it away from the kid because he's 11.
Yodeling.
That's pretty good.
Yodel, hee-hoo.
Oh, God.
Wow.
I used to yodel.
Oh, God.
No.
And Anthony Rizzo's walk-up song is now the Yodeling Kids remix.
Oh, my God.
So that is blasting through the speakers at Wrigley.
That's unfortunate.
Atlantic Records has signed a deal with him.
They're still in Atlantic Records. That's encouraging to know.
That was the home of Ray Charles and Aretha Franklin and AC/DC, by the way.
I remember that cool label that would you watch on the turntable. Yeah. Atlantic Records. Wow. Good for them. I'm glad to see they're still there.
Oh, God. He's just released a single titled Famous.
Don't get me wrong. It's pretty cool to be on TV. So all the folks back home can see me. And that I'm living it out. All the things I used to dream about. Yeah, it's pretty great. Saying on stage. Proud cause there ain't an empty seat in the place. But girl, ever since I met you, I got a whole new perspective. If I'm gonna be famous for some,
until Diane Warner wrote this one.
How old
old is
so
this kid?
Cute. He's 11, talking about getting the girl.
He's also 11 years old, talking about how he's kind of worn down from the fame and life on the road and how what a rough time it is.
He comes from a town of 700 people.
All of a sudden, he's Bob Seger with Turn the Page.
I liked him when he wasn't so mainstream.
Yeah. I'm weary from the road. I need a break.
He's performed like twice at Coachella and like his local Walmart.
Right, Atlantic is genius though.
That's
because
so fantastic.
This is like I can just tell you that the record executives are like, "Baby, darling, sweetheart, listen, we got this kid from some crap kicker town somewhere.
Oh,
he was in a Walmart. What we're gonna do? We're gonna make him a big star in country music because they're gonna fall for it. That audience is totally gonna fall for it."
Wow,
that's what's going on.
I think he's the next
there.
Justin Bieber.
I'm telling you. If I'm gonna be famous for something, I wanna be famous for love. Listen, people laughed at Taylor Swift when she was 15 years old and she was on the Soul to Soul tour.
Mm.
And now look, right? So you never know.
I just want to hear him yodel.
It's just like,
I'm just saying that kid it is a little early to be.
You're gonna have his comeback tour in July?
Number two.
Reunion tour.
Exactly. Yeah.
You might remember this one. It's from May.
And in December, he can do his final tour of all time. Tour open with Elton John. I'm never going back.
Never going back out again.
Fantastic.
God. God bless him, though.
Leave the 11-year-old alone.
He's from, I'm telling you, this kid, he's from downstate Illinois. Right?
Wow. Local kid.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah.
Galconda,
Illinois.
It's near Wakanda.
No,
Wakanda's the other way.
No, it's the exact opposite. I don't know. Anyway, we wish him the best of luck. But I'm just telling you right now, this is such
fantastic.
A cynical play by the executives at Atlantic Records. It is completely what it is.
Next, we're going to find out that he kicked pixie sticks and Sprite, and he's gone into rehab for it. Pressures of touring got to him.
All right. Let's see. Where did I do the number two yet?
No.
I'll do it again. There we go. Kanye West is also going to be releasing new music.
Okay.
Sort of. Mm-hmm. The 40-year-old rapper released a track titled Lift Yourself, which he shared with fans on Twitter. However, despite initially sounding like new music, it seemed that he was actually just trolling fans with a joke track.
Boopity-scoop. Scoop-dee-dee-whoop. Whoop-dee-scoop-dee-poop. Poop-dee-scoop-dee-scoop-dee-whoop. Whoop-dee-scoop-whoop-poop. Poop-dee-dee-whoop.
All right, let me ask you a question.
I would have gone with
What's going to do... All right, can we get the 11-year-old kid back?
Oh, we can mash
Actually,
those
Actually, could you
two?
Mash those two?
Yes. Did you see that on stage, the yodeler, and then all of Kanye goes up, whoop-dee-doop-doop-scoop.
Add a little yodel to the mix, too, though.
Yeah.
Well, what's Kanye doing? Has Kanye lost his mind? Kanye has kind of lost his mind.
He's just trolling everyone.
That's amazing, though.
I like how this is how crazy America has become. People, everybody stand down for just a second. It is not, at some point in American history, this era will come to an end and it will be judged on its merits or failings. Right? So the idea that at any given moment we have to, that Chance and Kanye have to go to war with each other over who's, and then apologize for. So Kanye says he likes Trump. Chance goes, "Hey, give Kanye a chance." And then people jump on Chance the rapper for saying that. Now he's got to, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have agreed with Kanye.
And then John Legend sends a note to Kanye, and Kanye tweets it, and they're supposedly feuding. And then they posted a picture of them taking a selfie, which is hilarious because they look like everybody's dad. They like cut themselves off in the picture. They're like out of frame. These two guys.
The reality. Let's be real here for a second. It does not matter what Kanye thinks. Kanye's a Kardashian. It doesn't matter what he thinks, or Chance, or anybody. It just matters if it turns into 25,000 degrees above zero. Sometime soon here.
Whoopity doop scoop scoop.
Wait, we did a little mashup. Here we go. Don't get me wrong, it's pretty cool to be on TV. So all the folks back home can see me. Whoopity scoop. Scoopity dee whoop. Whoopity scoop dee poop. And then I'm living it out. All the things I used to dream about. Yeah, it's pretty great playing on stage. Whoopity scoop dee whoop. Whoopity scoop. Yeah, there we go.
That would be number one for sure on iTunes. For sure.
All right. And finally.
Number one.
Dennis Rodman couldn't be happier that his two best friends in life are now friends together. So the three of them can all hang out.
Oh, gosh. Jeez Louise.
Donald Trump, Kim Jong-un, and Dennis Rodman. He believes, and I think he might be right, that he played a really big part in all of this.
I think that his impression about Donald Trump and an American people, I think that he has a change of heart. But the fact that when I went up there last time, for his birthday, I gave him Donald Trump's books. I did a lot of things with Donald Trump and stuff like that. I think people know that. You probably have the video of me giving his books and all the stuff about Donald Trump and about Americans. I think he didn't realize who Donald Trump was at that time until, I guess, he started to read the book and started to get the understanding, stuff like that.
Wait a minute.
He didn't know who that's Donald not going to be good, by the way. Don't. Oh, if Trump hears that.
What do you mean Kim Jong-un didn't know who it was?
I don't want to take all the credit. I don't want to sit and say, I did this, I did that. No, that's not my intention. My intention was to go there and try to be a sports ambassador to North Korea so people understand how the people are in North Korea. And I think that has resonated into this whole point now. And Donald Trump, you know, I don't ask Donald Trump for anything. You know, I like Donald Trump. He's a good friend.
He was right the first time. It's residue.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. I can't. You know what?
Let's nominate Dennis for a Nobel.
They should get it together.
Oh, my gosh.
Donald Trump and Dennis Rodman get the Nobel Prize.
That would be a really whoopity scoopty doop.
Poop. Scoopty scoopty
whoop. The top five at five.
Dude, Palax News being brought to you by Fisher Nuts, oven roasted, never fried. Rokan Show. Anna DeVlantz is off today. Richard Roper is in. Everybody else is in their position.
I'm here.
Yeah, okay. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll talk to Violetta about her time in Las Vegas. But before that, let's get to something that actually impacts the world.
It impacted my world.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Gordon Chang is joining us. And Gordon Chang. Oh my gosh.
Did you hang up on Gordon Chang?
No, I did not hang up on Gordon Chang. No. Just stay out of my way, Violetta. By God, we've got important things we've got to do here. There he is. Gordon Chang, author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes On the World, is probably the most... He's the man of the hour right now. He's going to answer a bunch of questions about what is happening here because we are about to enter into some sort of a deal, it appears, with North Korea, or not. And then the Iranian deal, we've got now within 2 weeks, that is, the president has to make a decision about to whether to stay in or ditch the Iranian nuclear deal. And as we sit right now, it certainly appears that the president, the rhetoric at least coming out of Washington, coming out of the White House, is that the president's going to walk away from this deal. And then today, Israel has a press conference in which they announced that they have a trove of documents and pictures that prove that Iran has cheated and lied and misled the world and the International Atomic Energy Administration about what's going on in Iran concerning their nuclear deal. Gordon, what can you tell us about this? Do you think that Iran has been lying, or is this something that is designed to get the world's attention on the eve of a decision here?
Well, I think it's actually both. The Iranians clearly lied in the first decade of this century. They said that they didn't have a nuclear weapons program, but it was clear that they did. The issue right now is whether any of the documents that Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, revealed today actually relate to the period after the signing of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, in other words, the Iranian nuclear deal. If they are, then this puts the whole discussion about President Trump's walking away from it in a different light, of course, because then the issue will be how many other countries will follow us. At this particular time, it's just President Trump. But nonetheless, something else could occur, especially if those documents that Netanyahu has show what he said.
Well, I guess, you know, the real question here is, Is there enough time here to make a determination about that, or is the president negotiating with Tehran? Is there a moderate solution to this? I suppose, is there a reasonable solution in which they reopen this deal and they agree to extend the amount of time that non-proliferation is the right word here, but part of the Iranian deal is that it's a 9-year deal not to try to develop weapons. Can they extend that to 20 years or 50 years or indefinitely, do you think?
Sure. I mean, anything is on the table. So, for instance, President Trump could decide to really hold everything in abeyance in anticipation of further negotiations with the Iranians. And I think that that's pretty much what the Europeans want. You know, you had a series of European leaders come to the White House last week. You had Emmanuel Macron, and then, of course, Angela Merkel. And both of them were trying to convince President Trump to stay in the deal. Now, I don't know if the leaders of France and Germany knew about what Benjamin Netanyahu was going to do this week. But what we saw today was extraordinary, because here you had the head of government actually give a technical briefing, you know, as if he were some sort of CIA case officer. And I think that what's going to have to happen is there are going to be discussions among the various countries and among the publics in the various countries about what the Israelis have. Because if there is evidence from post-2015, when the JCPOA, the Iran deal, was signed, then clearly there's going to be some pretty hard bargaining with Tehran.
Gordon, what about the North Korean-Iran part of this equation, where you've talked about missile parts going one way and a lot of money going the other way, and China kind of looking the other way if parts are being shipped through their airport?
Yes. You know, there is a researcher at one of the larger think tanks in Washington, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, who estimates that each year the Iranians pay the North Koreans somewhere between $2.5 and $3 billion for their various forms of cooperation. That, of course, is missiles, but it's also nuclear weapons technology, from all that we can tell. And it could also be chemical weapons that the Iranians are buying for their friends in Damascus. So there's a lot of dirty business going on there. And this is one of the things that the previous administration in Washington didn't really want to look too carefully at. But nonetheless, at this particular time, we got to be concerned that even if there is no evidence of cheating in Iran, the Iranians could have their nuclear weapons program in North Korea, because there is that September 2012 technical cooperation agreement between Tehran and Pyongyang. There is believed to be Iranian technicians at a North Korean base close to the Chinese border. A lot of allegations, and we need to get to the bottom of that, because if we're going to continue with the Iranian deal, we have to make sure that they do not have a nuclear weapons program.
Wouldn't a deal with North Korea shut that down? I mean, if we're talking about it here, obviously U.S. intelligence knows that as well. I mean, wouldn't that be part of the deal?
Excuse me, the connection was bad and I lost your...
So the question is, wouldn't we be shutting down the Iranian deal in North Korea if we were to cut a deal with North Korea? I mean, that would be part of this, one would assume.
Yes, well, yeah, one would assume. In order to have a deal with North Korea that is actually going to give us enduring peace, it would have to have the strictest inspections regime on Earth. If we were to have that inspections regime, presumably we would find evidence of the Iranians in North Korea, or we could put that rumor to bed. Clearly, there's a lot that we need, and that really is the major failing of the Iranian deal. You have senior Iranian officials saying, for instance, that we have no right to look at their military bases. Well, that's a repudiation of the JCPOA. And that goes to the heart of the deal. So inspections, both for North Korea and Iran, are absolutely critical.
If you were a betting man, Gordon, would you say that a deal can be struck with North Korea?
I think that a deal, you can always strike a deal with North Korea. And the United States did that during both the Clinton and Bush administrations. The Obama administration actually came up with what's known as the Leap Day deal. So, yes, there can be a deal. The question in my mind is, can that deal actually work out? And for that, you'd have to have the North Koreans agree to do something that no one thinks that they will do. I actually think that they could, and that is give up all their nukes, give up their ballistic missiles and agree to verification, the likes of which we have not seen. I don't think that this is a Korean question. I mean, sure, Kim Jong-un, the ruler of North Korea, doesn't want to do this, but it's an issue of whether President Trump is willing to exercise the political resolve to do those things that are necessary to protect the American people.
Well, what would they want in exchange?
The North Koreans?
Yeah.
They actually, Kim actually told Moon Jae-in, the South Korean president, on Friday, according to the South Koreans, that Kim, in order to give up his nukes, wants only two things. He wants the United States to give a pledge to North Korea that we won't attack. And second of all, Kim wants the United States to sign a peace agreement to formally end the Korean War. In other words, to turn the 1953 armistice into a peace treaty. And, you know, many people, including me, think that if we could get to that result after 5 years of negotiation, we would declare that to be a major victory. But the North Koreans appear to be offering it even before the talks with President Trump starts. So there's a lot that's going on here that really is quite unusual. The North Koreans making concessions even before discussions begin. And that indication, to me at least, that the North Koreans think that they're playing a pretty weak hand.
I'm confused by that. I mean, they clearly have the nuclear technology. They do have a weapon, at least one that we're aware of.
And they probably have 30 to 60 of them.
So what's weak about their hand? I mean, you know, giving that up is a pretty big deal.
It's an enormous deal. But the problem for Kim Jong-un is that President Trump's sanctions and the UN sanctions are crimping the flow of money to the regime, so much so that it might be endangering Kim's rule. And Kim may be thinking that if he doesn't give up his weapons, that he's going to run out of cash. And if he runs out of cash, so for instance, that he couldn't buy the loyalty of senior regime elements with right. luxury items, then he very well may decide that he would be out of power. So that's not an irrational calculus. Now, I don't know if Kim is there yet, but that may be one of the reasons why he's making concessions before the discussions with President Trump actually begin.
Got it. All right. Wow. This is an interesting year, is it not?
Absolutely. Especially you got both Iran and North Korea at the same time. And let's not forget we got the trade discussions with the Chinese, which, of course, impact all of our relations with Beijing, including our relations regarding North Korea.
And Tehran, because the Chinese are very invested in that part of the world right now. So,
and Tehran and a number of other things. Yes.
All right. Okay. Well, I wouldn't want all that for the exchange yet for all the trouble with Monkey on a Rock or whatever it was that David Letterman used to say.
Thank goodness we have Gordon to break it down for
exactly.
us,
Gordon Chang, author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. Thank you, Gordon.
And thank you so much.
All right. Let's now check in with Judy Bialak. What's coming up at the top of the hour in the WGN newsroom? Yeah, it's the Rokan Show. That's me. Anna DeVlantz is off today. Richard Roper is in. She returns tomorrow to this very radio program. And coming up, we'll find out what Violetta's life was like in Las Vegas. What was Las Vegas like when Violetta was there? That'll be in the 6 o'clock hour.
Okay.
Yeah. Were you celebrating something there?
No, just life.
Oh, gosh. Mm-hmm. So far, what she has described is the exact first 15 minutes of the first Taken movie. Where are they? Yeah. Hi, everybody. I'm new. This is my room key. Would you like a copy just in case? My mean cousin won't be around at all. Would you like to kidnap me?
We're in room 438. Yeah. If you need anything.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, you have to say your room number when you're ordering drinks at the at the pool. They put it on your room number. Yeah. I don't know. It's very complicated.
How many days were you there?
Like three.
Nobody ever has the direct answer when you ask them that. Different.
This is great because she was gone Friday, so it couldn't be more than three.
Okay, yeah, it's three.
Okay.
Three's enough.
Final answer.
Three is enough, really. Three days in Las Vegas is about 2 weeks anywhere else.
See, I could have done like two more days at least.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
I did that a couple of times. We're like, you know what? We're having so much fun. Let's stay. Oh, and then the fifth day, you're like, we shouldn't have done that.
Boy.
All the money we won is gone. I cannot tell you
how much that extra 2 days in Vegas cost me once. And it wasn't the gambling either. Yeah. It was everything else
that
happened.
It's always a girl.
Yeah. Well, in my case, it always was a girl. All right.
I'm still thinking about that time. You know, it's baseball season. We got the White Sox. You can get the latest on all things White Sox every morning on the Steve Cochran Show, 6 to 10 a.m.
There you go.
Love it. Love it.
All right, we're playing that Vegas-y music because our own Violetta Podermedic, she went to Las Vegas for the first time.
It was my first time.
Mm-hmm. And she lived to tell about it, and so did Vegas, which I think is the most important thing.
I was just a drop in the water there.
Isn't that
the ocean?
Isn't that the truth? Now you went with five other girls.
Yes.
Okay.
Five of us girls just letting loose in Vegas.
And you stayed at a swanky hotel.
Yeah, we stayed at a nice hotel. Which was key.
You could say now you're not there anymore. Where'd you stay?
We stayed at the Wynn.
Beautiful. Oh, love the Wynn.
We didn't get massages.
That's always what the question people ask if you say I stayed at the Wynn.
Right. Did
you
get massages?
The wind.
Steve Wynn can't see what's going on.
Oh, anyway.
It works out. Just don't move your hand.
The wind in the encore.
Wow, Mr. Wynn's seeing us personally.
Yeah. All right. So what? Let me ask you a couple of questions. Did you gamble?
Yes, we gambled.
Do you know anything about gambling?
No. But
what did you gamble on then?
So I played roulette, war, which I don't like war. It just seems too easy. And then...
it seems too easy. How much money did you win?
I didn't win any, but I mean too easy for the house.
Yes.
And then I played the slots. And my sister
played Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah. Yes. And she did that thing where you get a free spin and then you just pull the lever with bet all and it lands on a number and you win that number. And she won a pretty significant amount of money.
How much?
About $2,000.
Excellent.
Pretty nice. That's nice.
Did you go to any good buffets? A lot of buffets out there.
Yeah, we just went, we stayed at the Wynn. They had a really good buffet for breakfast and lunch.
Now they also have, I believe, the Wynn, as many of the establishments have out there, different swimming pool options right?
Yeah, we checked them all out. There's a topless pool,
European style.
Yeah,
That's what they call it. That at Caesars they call it topless. Yeah. At the Wynn they call it European style.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
I'm like, where's the topless bar? I didn't really fit in at the Wynn all the time. You know, they're a little classy over there. Me and my friends were like, okay, can't go with cover-ups to get some lunch.
I could just imagine what was going on there. They do have that beautiful restaurant, though, that like looks at the side of a gigantic waterfall or something,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the SW and then the Lagos also facing
that. Yeah, Lagos,
us.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they have those
Everything's
little...
man-made out there. Did you notice that? No matter what you go see in Las Vegas, it's basically a creation by somebody else. Even it's like, look, it's the Grand Canyon. No, it's not. It's been totally made up, but we don't want you to leave the casino. Just keep gambling.
Yeah.
Yeah, they know how to keep you there for sure. First we started with the topless pool. Then we made our way to a strip club, which was exciting.
Wow.
In Vegas.
I wanted to see
what it looked like, what it was like in Vegas. It was pretty raunchy.
Just as depressing as it is anywhere else. Yeah,
but it was fully...
fully nude?
Yeah.
Oh,
so.
Gosh.
Oh,
yeah,
gosh.
With liquor.
Oh, God.
Which I hear are hard to find, but we found it. And we hit up a comedy bar. That was fun.
So six girls just going to a strip club, a fully naked strip club in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't there scouting for some some act that somehow your family's going to put on, another circus act?
No.
That's not what you were doing?
No, it was just, I don't know, we wanted to
check it out. Did you guys offer internships? We're here looking for internships.
Did you make any friends at the topless bar? Like, change numbers? I guess they don't have any place where they can put their business card.
I mean, we were talking to them. I was asking them if they have kids, like, what their end goal is. You know, really.
Moving questions.
They do love those kinds of things. Yes, like James Lipton. I do remember you from starring in Stormy Daniels. That was me.
But the Strip is so nice. There's always something to look at. There's so much going on. And the Bellagio was probably my favorite, watching the water show. I mean, I could have stayed there all night.
Oh, like, you were in the Ocean's 11 movies.
I know, exactly. It felt.
Did you get any of those long drinks that they get that the girls walk down
the
street?
No, of course, my sister wanted one. I'm like, I'm not getting you an Eiffel Tower from the Paris Club. Stop being so basic. And give me your $2,000 winnings. You can't be trusted.
Stop being so basic. Fantastic. And it was hot out there, right?
Oh, it was so nice. It was, yeah, it was really hot.
So
landed, it was 92 degrees.
Yeah. So you go to the pool, you hang out.
Get a little tan.
You get a little tan. You go to a strip club.
Yeah.
You're like a businessman on a yeah. I mean, it's like the craziest thing. It was like, yeah, all right,
here's, yeah. And here's the other thing I want to know. Okay, so there's six of you. Now, here's my guess. You had two rooms, right? Did you have two rooms?
No, we had three, two in each.
Because guys will never do that after a certain age. Like, but you know, women will be like, oh, there's just five of us in one room. We're fine.
No, it was nice. And, oh, the automatic shades. Didn't know they were automatic at first. I'm like pulling them apart. I'm like, I got to see the Strip. And there's a button for it, actually. It's pretty fancy.
Button for everything.
I've got, yes, there is. I've got to see the Strip. That's the one thing. Mm-hmm. I cannot die before I see the Strip. You didn't want to get in a helicopter, go to the Grand Canyon or anything, did you?
I wanted to, but I just recently saw those videos of people, like, you know, not going so well.
They got all kinds of things. There's nothing that you cannot buy or partake in Las Vegas that exists on Earth.
Oh, don't I know it.
That's true.
There's also dispensaries that are legal, I believe.
Yes. Did you get like a little gummy thing?
No, but anything? A lot of people. So people at the pool are very talkative. That's where we made most of our friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's also when we knew that Mel Brooks was going
to
be at the.
Oh, wait. We didn't get it. Hold on a second. Oh. Let's just get to that story in just a second. You blew my setup for that story. Whoops. But now that you've blown it, let's just do it. So we get a picture from Violetta, who's got her arms around comic legend. I mean, in terms of an author of comedy in the 20th century into the 21st century, Mel Brooks stands almost unparalleled in American comedy as a writer, as a filmmaker, even as a performer. I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than Mel Brooks. And we get a picture from Violetta of her standing there with Mel Brooks, and she's like, who is this guy? I met him. Everybody's making a big deal about him, but who is he? So you have no idea who Mel Brooks is. You'd never seen Blazing Saddles or Young Frankenstein or anything like that when you were a kid?
No.
You were still a kid, but even like nobody
introduced that to you? No, I definitely want to go check it out now. He was so nice. I think we ran into him at the Bellagio, actually. We didn't run into him at the Wynn, but... And he just was coming out of one of the private rooms over there. He was with a little posse. And we were like talking to him, or someone next to us was like, oh my God, that's Mel Brooks. I'm like, who's Mel Brooks? I don't know. I want to talk to him. So then I was like, I'm going to go talk to him. I brought him over to the girls. We all chatted him up. He was so nice. We got some pictures.
Well, you brought him over? What happened to his posse? They were like...
They just let him... Yeah, he was like, okay. I'm like, it's my first time in Vegas. Oh, of course, God, that's the first thing I told him.
And everybody that you started, like... Yeah. Yes.
I wasn't sure if I should go with it's my birthday, first time in Vegas, or like, I'm a bachelorette, you know? I didn't know which one would get you most attention.
Gosh. Yeah, because it's not like you could refer to any of his work and tell him how much you admired it. Like, you know, you were wonderful on All in the Family, Mr. Brooks. No, that wasn't me.
I mean, aren't you from Meet the Parents?
You were on the Baltimore Orioles, Brooks Robinson.
All right. Oh God.
He was very nice.
How long did you spend with Mel Brooks, legend?
Like
American icon and treasure.
5 minutes.
The longest 5 minutes of Mel Brooks is 9 decades.
No,
on this
he was
planet.
More than welcome to leave. We didn't hold him.
Right. They were like, okay, we're done with you, sir.
Yeah.
So when people were making a fuss about him, he could have been even just like the maitre d' of the restaurant or the mayor of Vegas, as far as you were concerned.
Yeah, it really didn't matter to me. It was like
people seemed to know him. I'd like to meet him.
Right, exactly. That was pretty much all I needed.
Were you guys celebrating something? Is this like was a bachelorette party or anything?
No, we just went out to Vegas. Nothing special.
Okay. That just she'll say.
Just a little girls' trip.
And you went out with six. Did you come back with six?
Yes, we came back with six. The plane ride home was insane. People don't stop partying even when they leave Vegas.
Well, you got to get over the hangover.
Yeah.
Some people don't ever sleep in Vegas. And Vegas is designed to not allow you to sleep. It's designed to keep you, because the casinos, you have no idea what time it is.
Yeah.
They have something that interrupts your ability for your watch to work.
And to find an exit, you know, no matter which way you go, you'll have to go through a row of slot machines.
We kept running into stuff. I'm like, I didn't know this was here. Where are, you know, there's like three different ways to get everywhere. You can never find the front door, that's for sure.
They have those little signs that point you to things, and they're not really pointing in the right direction. They're sort of like just over this way, restaurant row. And you follow it, and you're like, we just started here already.
Yeah, it's an arrow that sends you in a very vague direction.
It really does. And even the pattern of the carpets is all designed to kind of keep you staying there and kind of a slightly disoriented. They have meetings about things like that.
It is true. You have to spend a lot, as you have, and I've spent a little bit of time there, but you've spent a lot of time there, Richard Roper. Almost an impossibility. You have to really know those casinos well to be able to get your way in and get your way out. Yeah. Or know if there's a specific table you're looking for or whatever it was.
Yeah, but most of the time you don't even care. You're like, I ended up here.
That's
went
true.
In Vegas.
That's
Let's just
fun.
Have
yeah.
fun.
That's the point of Las Vegas. But there's a moment where you're like, you almost get sick on fun. it's like you're like, okay, I've had the fun. Now what am I? It's like having too much candy. You start to have that feeling like, okay, I don't know what to do now. It's overload, because it's designed to keep your senses peaked at it. Because the sound, even the sound, which now they've muted a little bit in the casinos because they realized that it was sending some people out. Like the slots used to make a ton of noise.
Oh, yeah.
And now they make a lot.
It's a little different.
You know, it's more of a hum, but it gets you interested. And the next thing you know, you're playing Friends slots and, you know, Joey's, and all of a sudden you've got a how you doing, and you know, like, you know, and now, but there's no coins. It just kind of gives you the ding, ding, ding.
And there's always a point where you walk out and the sun's coming up. You're like, wait a minute, what time is it? What happened? How long have we been here?
That is really true.
Where am I?
Yeah.
Did you ever make it to downtown Vegas?
No, and I regret not making it. That's where I wanted to end up. I wanted to go to the Las Vegas sign and
The Las Vegas sign, I can tell you, is much smaller than you think it is.
Oh, that's right.
Really?
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
Everything else is so much bigger than I thought. I didn't realize the strip was like on like a Lakeshore Drive almost type street. I thought it was like just on a small street.
No, and you cannot go from one hotel to the other unless they're affiliated.
Right.
So if you want to go from an MGM, an M Life hotel, to like the Wynn, you have to. It's a 16-mile walk in another circle. It's designed to discourage you from leaving their
and
own
in
campus.
And in 4-inch heels, you're like, no, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, you think that the casino next door, we could just walk there, and it really is. It'll take you 20 minutes. And you can't hail a cab on the strip. That's illegal. They don't want you going anywhere. It's basically a hostage situation. You've already had the Helsinki syndrome or whatever they call it, the Stockholm syndrome.
I won't ask you exact dollar amounts, but a percentage. It's Mel Brooks. It was Mel Brooks.
I'm still thinking
a percentage
that.
Of the money that you left with, you returned with. Can you give me a rough percentage? Most people, it's around 5 to 10%. If that
they return with?
Yeah.
No. Mine's much higher than that.
Did you have like a little budget? You were going to bring like 300 to gamble and that was it, no matter what?
No, I didn't budget anything. I just...
That's right.
Who are you talking to?
I forgot. I'm talking to a young woman. Yeah, I didn't budget anything, you idiot.
Well, everything was kind of predetermined, I guess. You know, the Wynn gives you the breakfast packages and then the lunch package. So that was already done. I don't know.
Just talking about the gambling part.
Oh, I didn't gamble that much. Plus, I made money back on the stuff. Like, I'm like very, I cash out before I lose it the second time.
I think also lifting Mel Brooks' wallet was a good play.
Yeah, that was
a
nice move, too.
Yeah.
Just one more hug.
Plus all that extra work you got in at the club.
How long did you spend at the strip club? I just want to know the answer to that question.
Enough songs to get to know the girls.
Enough songs.
The songs are always shorter because they charge per song, and it's like 20 of them go by in like 5 minutes. You're like, what?
The short version.
They're like, it's like, mom, per song. I'm like, oh, dear.
I mean, they were pretty, too, the girls.
Vegas.
Yeah.
That's right. That's
like the Mecca of the strip
club. It's the Broadway of strip clubs. That's what it is. You want to make it to Vegas.
Yeah. It's funny to see the guys on the street who get those little printouts, you know, and the guy's like so drunk. He's like walking, can't even look. He's like, oh, which one should I go to? He's like holding both of the girls up.
Yeah, they're like baseball cards. Yeah, the women
I gotta, like, collect them all.
I'm like,
it's like a little bio
home,
and some hobbies on the back of the card. With
batting average.
Their stat, yeah.
I'm 1,000%.
Yeah. I'll trade you an amber for an amber.
Okay.
I've always wanted to be the announcer at one of those clubs. Cheryl to the stage. Welcome,
Cheryl.
Oh, my
gosh. Yeah, those guys always think they're in show business. It's so true. Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Clarissa. She's a school teacher working her way towards her master's. Cue the Van Halen.
Like, anybody cares. I know. Just get up. I don't need her background.
Yeah, but it's a little teasing before the action.
It's hilarious.
I love her work. She's great. I can't believe it's a Clarissa day.
The starting
good times
lineup,
in Vegas.
And now,
be doing the news. I can tell you that much.
North Carolina,
no tattoos. No, nobody got a tattoo.
Oh no, someone wanted to get a piercing, but we said no.
No, yeah, no, don't do that either. No.
I won't even ask.
No,
Martyr.
Yes.
Where? Where's the? Where?
All right. Yeah. This is what I'm going to talk about.